another edition of Thinking Like a Lawyer. I'm Joe Patrice. That's Catherine Rubino. Chris Williams is with us. We are all from Above the Law, and we're here to chat about the big legal stories of the week, as we do all the time. But, you know, we're here.
It's kind of what we do.
It is. It is. Well, it's half of what we do.
What's the other half?
Well, we have a little bit of small talk.
Did you say small talk is a full half of what we do?
I mean, okay, it's part of what we do.
It's an element.
Okay.
Enough
math. How's your weekend, Chris?
I had a good weekend.
Good.
I missed the last week. Sorry to all you out there in the listening world who missed my sultry tones. But good news is it was a good week. I was in Florida. Got to see some family. Mm-hmm. I was there for my my cousin Isla's first birthday. Which is cool. I made the decision that of all the cousins that she has, I'm going to be the best one. So if you're listening to this, fellow combatants, I'm going to go full Highlander. Like, I'm learning my sword technique. I'm going to get a Zweihander. I'm so mean, but like in a peaceful way. Please don't use this against me in a future lawsuit. But it was great. It was great. Went to Disney.
Yay!
I'm not a Disney adult. Cough, cough, but I can see the appeal.
See, this is how it starts. They get ya.
Becoming a Disney adult is like with most kinks. It starts as a joke and then it just ramps up. But yeah.
What was your favorite Disney ride?
My favorite Disney ride was the only one I went on. It was a bumper car thing. And I got on it and I realized that this may shock some of you. I'm a nerd. Because as I was riding through it, I was thinking about this one chapter in Practical Philosophy about Give the Loves. And I was like, oh, wait, this feels like free will, but it's actually being controlled by something else. And then my date was like, basically like, shut up. And I was like, I get it. But it was a very good time.
So you went on like Tomorrowland Speedway? Is that what we're talking about? I can't think of
it
what
could
else
be.
Would be.
I don't remember the names because, again,
the
not
little
a Disney
puttering
adult.
Cars that are on rails.
It was one car. We weren't allowed to hit the other cars.
Right. Yeah. That's the Speedway. Yeah. That's like the only thing I would never ride. interesting.
Hey, well, you know. Another thing is the swag I picked up is ridiculous. So one thing, Disney ride is 50th year. Also, Disney's only 50 years old. Like
Disney World.
Okay. Got you. That explains why 1928 was on the jacket that I bought, which I bought.
Right.
It was a bomber jacket, Mickey Mouse bomber jacket, and I'm going to bag at least three grandmothers in this jacket. It is so fly.
Nice. Well, okay. Catherine, how are you?
I'm doing well. I had some friends over, did a little barbecue action, and, you know, we're in the middle of a heat wave here in the Northeast, so we did some swimming as well.
Good.
How about you, Joe?
Yeah, pretty uneventful.
You survived. I suppose that should count as a victory of sorts.
That is true. Did survive the heat wave and storms and all. So, yeah. All right. Well, I think that puts an end to this.
Always eventful in small talk, Joe.
I mean, I don't know. I've already blown the horn. I can't actually continue. By
I think I'll allow it.
You toot your own horn all the time, Joe.
I played around with some, I have one of those whipping siphons that you can charge with NO2 and all, and I made a brown butter sauce that was really good, you know.
Look at you.
So I played around with that sort of thing.
Being all crafty and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I did some cooking.
What'd you put the brown butter sauce on?
Artichoke.
Ooh.
See, Catherine has much higher faith in you. I thought you were just spooning the brown butter in the mouth directly.
Yeah.
That's an unfortunate visual we have now given our listeners.
Oh, no.
So, speaking of unfortunate statements,
okay.
That's a good transition. So,
it's as good as we're going to get, I'll tell you what.
So, Catherine, you put together a story that was the big one of last week. So, tell us a little bit about that.
I think I know what you're talking about.
I would hope so, because in the production memo, it explained that that's what we're going to talk about first.
You know what? I think you pretend that people read everything you write.
Fight.
But anyway, this is a story about an attorney who fancied himself more clever than everyone else in the courtroom. He had recently lost a motion, and it was he wished the after the motion, he said, oh, you know, I just want to wish and named the male attorneys in the room. I hope you all have a good weekend. And to his adversaries, who were both, who were all female, not both, but all female attorneys, said, see you next Tuesday.
Right.
Which, in case, and the poor judge was like, that's very kind. I did not know the other meaning behind the phrase, see you NT, and was unaware that they sort of had this hidden meaning. When it was brought to the judge's attention, I was like, you might want to check out this Urban Dictionary definition of CNX Tuesday. Brought everyone into his chambers for a meeting, and the attorney was like, oh, I didn't think anybody would understand what I meant.
So, okay, so the answer to being called out about this is, I didn't think you'd figure this out.
Mm-hmm. I said it was an in-joke between himself and someone else and his other folks in his office. And I'm like, and everyone else under the age of 45, maybe?
Yeah, I definitely didn't get it. I thought my response to that was how when Northerners get told bless your heart, and it's like, oh, they care about my heart health. Like, I had
no clue. So
I was actually surprised actually by exactly that reaction, Chris, because there was a ton of folks when it kind of, the story blew up on social media. And one of the things that I found the most illuminating was the number of attorneys who responded was like, I had no idea that's what that meant, or how many times have I been insulted and just never understood? Mm-hmm. But I thought this was a very well-known insult. She's a real CNX Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
yeah.
mean, I guess so, that I guess that shows the people you hang around, because my friends don't
perhaps.
Say that.
Like, you
know. Or maybe people say that to Catherine a lot. I don't know. But
I am friends with the likes of you, so maybe I'm used to being insulted by
obviously
folks.
Not.
Fight.
With that said, though, this is actually an interesting question as an ethical matter. So when confronted, the answer, oh, I just assumed nobody would figure it out, is not a great answer.
No.
On the other
like,
hand,
bro, that's not an excuse.
On the other hand, part of me thinks, you've been caught at this point. Mm. It seems like attempting to lie to the court further could only make it worse.
You know, the funny thing here is, here's my philosophy brain. I feel like it's kind of like a Barkley defense. Like, if an insult is said in the middle of the woods, does anybody hear it? You know, it was like, If nobody knew, I mean, it's still bad, but I guess that's the only direction that could make sense. Like, oh, I have no foul. Nobody understood it. Like, it was just like negligent or whatever. But I mean, it's still dumb. Don't do it. Don't insult people.
And I guess this kind of goes to the question of how many folks could be expected to know it at a given moment. But sort of, I think in my peer group, I think sort of elder millennials would all be very, very familiar with this as an insult. And I do wonder if maybe there's sort of a weird in-between time, a generational issue where some folks may not be as aware of it. But I mean, it's hard to come up with it. I'm certainly not saying lie to the court, right? Because
right.
That's,
like, that's
only
going to
make
issue.
It worse, right? But at the same time, you know, well, I mean, I guess I would not be insulting my opponents in court unless I wanted everyone to know that I was in fact insulting my opponents. And maybe that sort of goes to the, he didn't think he'd get caught. He thought he was smarter, thought whatever. But the judge even said that not only was it problematic because you used this sexist insult against your opponents, but also you tried to pull one over on the court and it was referred to the disciplinary board as a result. It certainly, you know, is unacceptable, I think, at a minimum. But, you know, this attorney seemed to think that he was the only one smart enough to get it. He and his buddies.
Yeah, and I'm really hung up on this discussion of whether you attempt to, you know, when you, it's a bad defense to say, I didn't think I'd get caught. But I feel like the only hope you have in that situation is to come clean as quickly as possible, because it's not like they're going to, It's not like the judge is fooled anymore, so.
But I think there's like a way that you can potentially come clean, be like, yes, I did make this insult to my opponents. It was said at the heat of the moment. Also not saying that you kind of did it as a premeditated joke.
Oh, some contrition. I see.
Contrition and be like, yeah. You know, I'm so sorry. It was the heat of the moment. It was a contentious argument. I let my emotions get the better of me, blah, blah, blah. But being like, oh, I didn't think you'd get it.
Yes, I see what you mean.
Seems particularly insulting way to go about it.
I see what you mean. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
He could have pulled a Walter White. Remember that moment in, have y'all seen Breaking Bad? Mm-hmm. So remember the point where he's like, you caught me. Like, hands up. Like, still a dick, but it's like, well, you know, if you're going to be an asshole, commit to it. You know,
I did it. I was kind of also surprised, again, how many people admitted to not knowing that as a sort of undercover insult. But when I was finding gifts to use in the story, there were plenty of see you next Tuesday options. So.
Yeah, I would think so.
What is this a reference to? Because the way you're saying Tuesday is very specific.
Well, I mean, I think she's,
yeah, the well, first we time do I, know,
we all get what it's a reference to at this point, right?
No, but okay. I think, so the first, one of the first times I ever heard it was on American Dad and the character okay. Roger, although he doesn't say see you next Tuesday, he says catch you next Tuesday, but it's a very okay. like catty kind of, you know, because that character is meant to be like a Paul Lynde kind of, you know, caricature or whatever, but it's like, she's a real see you next Tuesday.
Yeah, I don't think Chris knows who Paul Lynde is, but no, I get.
But I asked it because there's a thing that I say, totally not intending to call people cunts, but I'm just thinking about it. I mm-hmm. say, like, if somebody's saying something like it is a regular occurrence, and to me it's like an everyday thing, I'm like, it's a Tuesday. And it's from, like, I think it's like a Mortal Kombat movie or something, like something with the guy who was the husband in the Addams Family, and he was the not Mortal Kombat.
It Street
was
Fighter.
Street yep. Fighter. And there was this woman, she was mad, like, you massacred my village. He was like, it was to me, it was a Tuesday. So I was just right. wondering, like, because when I say it, I always have that in mind. I was wondering if the See You Next Tuesday thing was a reference to a movie.
Which I believe is Raul Julia's final movie was Street Fighter, yeah.
There you go. Anyway. No, it's just that it starts with the letter T.
Yes. Generate quality briefs, memos, and redlines in minutes with Callidus AI. You enter the case's facts, then Callidus suggests bodies of law, statutes, and precedents. You tell it if those are relevant, and Callidus generates a well-cited, well-formatted document. You can trust what went into it because you put it there. Be exceptionally productive with better outcomes using Legal's most advanced AI platform. Just 3 minutes from registration to results. Get $90 off your first 2 months. Use promo code Joe at CallidusAI.com. That's CallidusAI.com.
Hey, Gee, what's up?
Just having some lunch, Conrad.
Hey, Gee, do you see that billboard out there?
Oh, you mean that guy out there in the gray suit?
Yeah, the gray suit guy.
Order up. There's all those beautiful, rich, leather-bound books in the background.
That is exactly the one. That's J.D. McGuffin at law. He'll fight for you!
I bet you he has got so many years of experience.
Like decades and decades. And I bet, Gee, I bet he even went to a law school.
Are you a lawyer? Do you suffer from dull marketing and a lack of positioning in a crowded legal marketplace? Sit down with Gee and Conrad for Lunch Hour Legal Marketing on the Legal Talk Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome back. So you also had a story about big law firms and a memo that went around, if you'd like to jump into that discussion. From the production memo that I sent, you would know that this was the story we were going to talk about. Seems it was a very intense story.
Oh, I remember now. You know, I don't need. There was a lot. I wrote a lot of stories last week, as it turned out.
Yeah. But only a couple of them were listed on the production memo I sent out.
I've had a busy morning, friend.
Yeah.
Sorry. We can't all keep only one thing in our mind like you can. Anyway. Whoa. this is, yeah, the litigation head at the big law firm at Akin Gump sent around a memo to associates. It turns out that partners seemingly are having a difficult time getting associates to take on more work. He said too many calls for help are either being ignored or met with, quote, I'm too busy. The problem, according to the litigation chair, is that that does not align with folks' timesheets. And indeed, the last two months of billables have been particularly low. And he also makes a correlation between low billables and people not coming into the office as per the firm's expectations. They're doing sort of a hybrid schedule where you're not expected to come in 5 days a week necessarily, but there is an expectation that you're at the firm several days a week, and it makes that kind of correlation, which I'm skeptical that that's the reason, because let's not forget there were plenty of years during the height of COVID when everyone was billing plenty of hours from their house. But regardless, this is sort of the distinction he's making. And he asks associates to bring more, quote, intensity to their practice, and also makes a plea for teamwork, because we're all in this together, really. And, as a lapsed Catholic, I kind of appreciated the guilt element as well.
So there are two issues here. The one is that in the mind of the firm, folks aren't billing enough hours. Mm-hmm. And the other is, putting aside how many hours are being worked, people aren't doing that work inside the office.
Right.
Okay, so to take the second part first, This is a recurring theme that we're hearing a lot about, which is the transition to a hybrid work model coming off of a couple of years where everyone was remote, that more or less proved that you could make a ton of money and bill a lot of hours while working remotely. So we have kind of a generational clash of folks who say, we've proven we can do this remotely, why do we have to go back to an office? And folks saying, yeah, you do have to go back to an office. Now, so far, the big firms, at least, are not trying to push coming back 5 days a week, But are saying that 3 to 4 days a week, people should be in the office, which, from my perspective, sounds like a great deal, but it seems that associates are pushing back on that.
Yeah, and I think actually in this email, kind of trying to create that correlation between office and billables is a little bit problematic, because I think the way to sort of get more folks on board with coming to the office on a regular basis is saying, listen, we know that in 2021, you billed X number of hours and that was great. But I think that what firms, and I think the more savvy firms are certainly doing, is trying to make the pitch anyway, that it's not just about billable hours. It's about creating a sustainable environment, and also teaching the next generation of attorneys at the firm.
Also known as Joe's pitch.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems.
Listen, a mid-level associate can continue, right? A senior associate knows what they're doing, but trying to get the younger folks, the first, second year associates, to understand, there's so much you pick up in an office environment when you're not even trying to learn, not just how to lawyer, but how a particular firm does what it does. And we also know that that's true because there's been a bunch of surveys done of incoming summer associates or first year associate classes, and they've all said that they overwhelmingly are looking to come into the office at least part-time.
To be fair, on an email chain, see you next Tuesday would be sunt.
So there's that kind of coming back to the office issue. But then there's that second question of how many hours are folks billing? And is, we've been talking for a while now that, work in big law is slowing down a bit. Folks are talking, projecting the potential for layoffs, which, kind of coming off the high of 2021 seems a little bit of a shock to the system, which I completely understand, but it is certainly talk that is going around. And I think it's something everyone has to be aware of. And listen, I don't know what associates in litigation at Akin Gump are billing. I don't have access to their timesheets. But if you're there and you're on track to bill 1,600 hours right now, you might want to react with intensity, as the firm would like. you know, if you're on track to bill 2,100 hours and the firm, you know, there's a feeling, well, maybe you could squeeze out 2,400 hours. Sure. Maybe take a couple, the summer months that are a little bit slower, you know, take that as a well-deserved break. But, you know, there's also plenty of talk about layoffs, and I don't think you want to be thought of as someone who's been shirking the overall responsibilities when, you know, partners are saying, we're making calls, we're asking people for help, and no one is responding. I don't think you want to be the kind of person that's thought of that way when rumors about potential layoffs are swirling around.
Well, yeah.
And unless you don't care about being laid off.
Right. And that's a thing for folks who haven't been through it before. Layoffs come, they come and go. And it's one of those situations where it is always the oncoming train at the end of the tunnel. Like everything's good in big law until the moment it isn't. Mm-hmm. And don't think that layoffs can't come because we just had a great year. That's almost always how it goes. Yeah, fantastic year.
2008, 2009 was after super high billables in 2007, right? These things happen and they're never fair. You know, it's not that the worst associates are the ones who bear the brunt of the down in economy. That's just not true. You might be the one who has to sort of bear it. And if there's any warning signs like there are right now, use that to your advantage. Be aware. Don't be caught sleeping because, you know, you just were like, well, I billed a lot last year. That's not always enough. And if you're the person or in a group of folks that are thought of as not trying hard, not being team players, that's an easy call for the firm. If they have to cut someone, don't make it easy for them to let you go.
Yeah, I think that's a fair.
Because it's not going to be fair just because you had a great 2020.
Yeah.
They've already collected that money. They no longer care about that time.
Yeah. And the market changes. Your practice group may not be useful at this point, and a decision needs to be made. And that's why, in some ways, more important than the numbers, the hard numbers of hours, is this phrase team player, because that shows the sort of subjective impression that the firm has of you.
And listen, it's not fair. It's often used to hide all sorts of ill motives, but it is still continues to be sort of an important factor when folks are making these decisions. So,
they're giving you,
giving you a heads up now.
Yeah, be careful. Tread very lightly when firms start talking like this because it may not be justified, but it is.
Right.
And you should be
aware.
And
you know, listen, this is the folks at Aiken giving the litigation department a heads up, but if this sounds at all familiar and you're at a different firm, take it that way.
Yeah.
You know, try to use this information to help your own career.
Well, we're back, and let's finish up by talking about the bar exam, which is going on right now for everybody listening to this. So that means for a large segment of our audience, you're probably listening to this a little bit late this week because you're doing the bar exam. We wanted to talk a little bit about there's just so many injustices involved in the bar exam as a whole concept, but this one deserved some special attention, which is I honestly thought this was a joke when I first saw it. I had hoped I didn't think it was a joke because I was pretty confident it was real. I just hoped that it wasn't. The New York Bar Exam, in particular at its Javits Center location, they have other locations, of course, but their Javits Center location released a menu where you could buy your lunch to eat during the bar exam. You know, it's a two-day exam, so 2 days worth of lunches.
Sure, and it kind of eases the process. You don't have to worry about waiting online, you know, during the limited time that you have off. You don't have to, if you're not from the area specifically, you may not know where all the fast food and or delis are.
Because Google is a thing that doesn't exist and couldn't be on your phone.
But it also takes one less thing that you have to worry about during that.
Sure.
Only get 1 hour. Not everyone's relaxation is waiting online. So take a little bit off and get your order of food delivered right to you.
Or, as the case may be, maybe don't do that because the bar exam is charging between $33 and $53 for boxed lunches.
That is absurd.
A $53 lunch consists of a turkey sandwich, pasta salad, potato chips, a cookie, and graciously includes a bottle of water. That is 53.
To be fair, these people just spent $200,000 to learn from Google how to be a lawyer. What's another 53 bucks?
See, so that means over the course of the exam, that's 106, which, yeah.
That's you 2 minutes really, of your con law professor talking about how the founding fathers think abortion is great. Well, but they, well, no,
think
whatever.
About all the really great food you can get in Manhattan for $53 a pop. Like you could get some significantly better food than a dry turkey sandwich and a thing of potato chips.
Within walking distance of the Javits. Oh, look, the Javits Center is not exactly in a hotbed area, but it is true. Better. They have now built the Hudson Yards area, which has eateries in there. You're within walking distance of a Shake Shack, I know.
Less than $53.
Yeah, when I did it, I was able to walk a little closer to Port Authority, which is about a 12 to 15 minute walk, which, you know, is significant. But up there, it's just fast food everywhere. So there are better options for you than $33 to $53. Obviously, at this point, anybody who's taking advantage of this has already paid it. But this is for anybody out there who might be doing this in the future. Like this, the bar exam is a broken system for a lot of reasons. There's not really a great reason why we make people take a doctrinal test from memory to perform a job that is about research. That seems that a job about research where people are specialists instead of generalists anymore, largely. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to have a bar exam in the first place. But this just really speaks to the overall contempt of the licensing process. We have this horrible exam that nobody actually sees as a benefit to protecting the public or ensuring that people are qualified lawyers. And on top of that, they're perfectly willing to charge you over $100 for two boxed lunches. People out there, you should be mad about the existence of the bar exam. You should be doing whatever you can. Everyone's busy, but if you aren't doing what you can to directly get involved with state bars to push back on the existence of this, do what you can to support people who are making those decisions. State reps, state senators, the folks who choose state Supreme Court folks, state bars often are really the people doing this. So get involved there.
Yeah. And I think it's also important because I think that a lot of the momentum in favor of the bar exam is a kind of attitude of, well, I went through it, so the next generation should have to do it too. And if you're at all outraged at the bar exam process, kind of getting rid of that instinct is super important. Mm-hmm.
I just know if there was someone selling hot dogs out front of that for like 10 bucks a pop, they would have made a killing.
That's a good point.
Well, in fairness, the 53 stands. Was in fact the kosher, and that was an added. It is even more difficult, I think, to find a kosher meal under those circumstances, which I think
all beef hot dogs for 15.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's why Chris's suggestion about
Hebrew
the
National
hot dog. Yeah, Hebrew National cart should be right there in front of the Javits Center. I think you're right. You could really, really rake it in there. It's unfortunate, but good luck to everybody out there who is taking the exam at this point. And hopefully, you know, odds are in your favor, all
maybe
that sort
odds
of thing.
Be ever in your favor.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thanks for joining us all today. You should be subscribed to the show, leave it reviews, all those sorts of things help people find the show. You should be reading Above the Law so you hear these stories and more as they happen throughout the week. You should check out The Jabot, Catherine's other podcast, or the Legal Tech Week Journalist Roundtable that I'm on. You can check out a bunch of other shows that none of us are on, but are nonetheless awesome, that are on the Legal Talk Network. We're available on social media. I'm at Joseph Patrice. She's at Catherine One, the numeral one. He's at Rights for Rent. And yeah, I think now that's everything.
Peace. Mm-hmm.
All right. Bye.
If you're a lawyer running a solo or small firm and you're looking for other lawyers to talk through issues you're currently facing in your practice, join the Unbillable Hours Community Roundtable, a free virtual event on the third Thursday of every month. Lawyers from all over the country come together and meet with me, lawyer and law firm management consultant Christopher T. Anderson, to discuss best practices on topics such as marketing, client acquisition, hiring and firing, and time management. The conversation is free to join, but requires a simple reservation. The link to RSVP can be found on the Unbillable Hour page at LegalTalkNetwork.com. We'll see you there.